This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington. The Secretary General of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, will address a joint session of the U.S. Congress Wednesday. Jens Stoltenberg is in Washington for celebrations marking NATO's 70th birthday. He says it's a time also when NATO has strong support here in the U.S.
We see that in the Congress. We see it in opinion polls. They all tell the same story. There is strong support for NATO in the United States from both sides. But that was also the clear message from President Trump today. He is a staunch supporter of NATO. At the same time, he conveys a clear message about the importance of that allies invest more, fair burden sharing, and NATO allies agree. We have actually all made the same pledge.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, the European Union's chief negotiator, said that Britain is getting closer and closer to having its exit from the EU go forward with no deal in place on the terms of its withdrawal. So far, British lawmakers have rejected Prime Minister Theresa May's proposals three times. May is expected to try to bring it back for a fourth vote. No agreement is reached on a plan by the EU's April 12th deadline. Britain may exit with no deal or try to get other EU members to agree to a longer extension. And hundreds of Algerians gathered in the capital, Algiers, late Tuesday to celebrate the resignation of President Abdel Aziz Bouteflika. His abrupt departure came after the defense ministry called on the long-term leader to step down immediately after weeks of nationwide protests calling for change in the government. The ailing president was set to step down at the end of his fourth term on April the 28th. For more news, please join us always at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. President Trump is offering mixed signals on whether he plans to close the U.S. southern border if Mexico does not stop the flow of undocumented migrants trying to seek asylum here in the U.S. AP correspondent Warren Levinson reports.
The president had said he could close the southern border as soon as this week. The White House now indicates that's not going to happen, but closure remains an option, insists Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, unless Democrats help do something to control surging numbers of immigrants.
We're at a breaking point, and they have left the president absolutely no choice.
Delays are mounting at entry points. Sanders says the White House is studying the effects of a border closure on security and commerce. I'm Warren Levinson.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence met with families of six Citgo Petroleum executives detained by President Nicolas Maduro's government for alleged corruption. During the meeting, Pence called for immediate release of five U.S. citizens and one legal permanent U.S. resident. The meeting was the latest move by the Trump administration to ratchet up pressure on the Maduro administration. The U.S. has joined scores of European and South American countries in recognizing opposition leader Juan Guaido as the legitimate president of Venezuela after last year's elections. Late Tuesday, Venezuelan lawmakers loyal to President Maduro stripped Guaido of the immunity from prosecution he enjoyed as a member of the parliament. The move paves the way for Guaido's prosecution and possibly his arrest for leaving the country in violation of a court ban. Boeing and the FAA, say more time is needed for a software fix for the troubled 737 MAX airliners that were grounded after two deadly crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
Boeing and U.S. aviation administrators are indicating more time will be needed to finish changes to a flight control system on the 737 MAX airliners. Boeing was expected to complete the work last week, but an FAA spokesman said Monday the company needs more time to make sure all issues were identified and addressed. The MAX aircraft were grounded around the world in mid-March, following the March 10th crash of an Ethiopian Airlines MAX 8 jet shortly after takeoff. In addition to approval from the FAA once changes are made, Boeing will also need clearance from safety officials in Europe and China. I'm Mike Rossia.
Authorities say the death toll from the cyclone in Mozambique last month has risen to nearly 600. Meanwhile, health officials are racing to contain a cholera outbreak in the storm-ravaged country, where more than 1,400 cases have been reported. And the U.S. Midwestern city of Chicago poised to elect its first African-American female mayor Tuesday night. The runoff election includes a political newcomer and a longtime local politician. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April the 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika resigned yesterday. That's one day after announcing that he would step down by the end of his term later this month.
As we speak now, tens of thousands of Algerians are cheering the resignation of President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. This resignation, I think, came after a very strong statement announced by the Chief of Staff, Ahmed Gaid Salah.
Suleiman Boussoufa is an Algerian reporter and political analyst. We have more on this story later on the show. And the World Health Organization says that insecurity and community mistrust in the Kivu province of the DRC is an impediment to international health efforts to bring the deadly Ebola outbreak under control.
We have so many other problems like insecurity, being killed for many years, access to water, education, and so on. So it takes time to convince them that Ebola is a real problem for them.
That is Ibrahim Masoke Fall. He's the World Health Organization Assistant Director General for Emergencies Response. The Jafono Reserve in Cameroon is a World Heritage Site. It's also one of the largest and best protected rainforests in Africa, with 90% of its area left undisturbed. But things are changing. We're covering that story and many more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Start the show today from the North African country of Algeria, where the President Abdelaziz Bouteflika resigned yesterday. That's one day after announcing that he would step down by the end of his term later on this month. Bouteflika is said to have given in to the pressure to leave office after the army signaled that they had lost confidence in him. He had been in power since 1999, but due to poor health, he had not addressed his nation in 7 years. Suleiman Boussoufa is an Algerian journalist and political analyst. He joins me on the line. I ask him what the mood is like in the country after the announcement that Bouteflika is going to resign.
As we speak now, tens of thousands of Algerians are cheering the resignation of President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. This resignation, I think, came after a very strong statement announced by the Chief of Staff, Ahmed Gaid Salah, who called the president to quit immediately after, of course, 2 decades in power and after at least 7 years of being totally absent. We all know in Algeria that the president was sick from May 2013 when he suffered a stroke and his young brother, Saeed, was ruling behind the scenes with the other brother. His name is Nasser. Anyhow, what's interesting in this statement that he called gang, the group who surrounds the president, and writes all letters or all statements in his name. This is, I think, very aggressive tone. We've never witnessed this tone in the history of Algeria since the coup d'etat of President Boumediene back in 1965.
Okay. Traditionally, what is the role of the military in Algeria? And what relationship do they have with Bouteflika?
The military is the main power in Algeria. And it's thanks to the military who appointed the President Abdelaziz Bouteflika back in 1999. Mm. So actually now we are back to zero. We are back to the start, to April 1999, where the general Toufik, the head of intelligentsia, now he's retired. Mm. He has chosen Bouteflika and he called him from Abu Dhabi to rule Algeria. So now what we are witnessing now is stopping this president who they brought from abroad to rule. So we are back to zero now.
Okay. Now, the elections were supposed to be held sometime this year. Did they say anything about if those elections are going to be held soon?
Actually, in his statement now, Gaid Salah, the chief of staff, called for Article 104 of the Algerian Constitution to be invoked to declare a state of vacancy in line with the incapacity of the president, but the president has resigned. So the head of Constitutional Council will take over for at least 45 days. After that, the head of the Senate, the upper house, will act as temporary president. But it seems now that the army will negotiate with some figures of popular movement and representatives of opposition to start a dialogue in order to start new era and new republic. We are not talking about the elections now. I don't think they'll held any elections before early next year.
Okay. Now, many protesters have said and were complaining that that Bouteflika was not the person really in charge, and that it was the people that are in his circles. Are there worries that the same people who have essentially been in power are going to stay in charge?
The army is showing goodwill for now. Authorities have seized the passports of at least 7 businessmen under investigation over corruption allegations. But those businessmen are from the inner circle of Saeed and President Bouteflika.
The AME's move, was this in response to the protests?
Of course. AME's move, yes.
You saw that as a direct response to the protests?
We used to have one power in Algeria, which is the army, and the facade is the presidency, like Bouteflika and his brothers, but now we have two powers, and power have switched to the streets, to the movement. And what we've seen from the 22nd of February is like every week the army is giving something new to the population.
As a person who has been covering Algeria, are you surprised at how this has played out, that the military has turned on Bouteflika?
Oh, yeah, we are surprised. Yeah, we weren't expecting that. Back 1 month ago, no, we never expected that.
Have you had any news of Bouteflika's inner circle right now, what they're up to?
No, we don't have any information about the group of Bouteflika and the inner circle.
Now, many people have said that Bouteflika is not the man who had the power. Who was the man behind the power?
Yeah, since 2013, May 2013, we all know that Saeed, his young brother, he was ruling behind scenes, and he was the most powerful man in Algeria. And he has his circle. Most of them are businessmen. They have full power, full access to Algerian banks.
That was Saliman Ossoufa, an Algerian journalist and political analyst, speaking to him on the phone. And meanwhile, reports say that the political situation in Algeria remains uncertain after the announcement that Bouteflika was resigning. As Edward Yerenian reports, feuding political and military factions appear to be waging a behind-the-scenes tug of war to determine the future of the country.
Amid the apparent confusion among Algeria's political and military elite, it appeared clear that protesters like this crowd heard here in the provincial town of Batna were intent on continuing demonstrations which began almost 5 weeks ago. Algerian analyst Fatah Ben Hammou told Al Arabiya TV it has been reported by some media outlets, including the Al Khabar newspaper, that the army favors former President Lamine Zerwell as the country's interim head once Bouteflika steps down. Amateur video on social media purported to show Zerwell returning a few days ago to Algiers. Amid the uncertainty over what comes next, one-time Algerian Prime Minister Ahmed Ben Bitour speculated about the legality of the coming phase of the country's political drama. He says Army Chief of Staff Ahmed Gad Salah probably senses the people will not accept Parliament Speaker Abdelkader Ben Salah as the interim leader, and the Constitutional Council has not responded to a request that the president be declared unfit, according to Article 102 of the Constitution. Ben Bitour said the army chief is planning to avoid the Constitutional Council entirely and make use of Articles 107 and 108 of the Constitution, which refer to the sovereignty of the people. At the same time, Algerian political leaders were questioning the legitimacy of the new government recently formed by new Prime Minister Nouredine Badawi. Tibi Rafiq of the Talayat al-Hurriyat party told Al-Hura TV that Badawi's government was unacceptable. Rafiq says that people oppose Badawi and alleges Badawi has been responsible for numerous acts of electoral fraud during his years as interior minister. Malik Ben Qasim of the ruling FLN party told Al-Hura TV, however, a political plan outlined by the army is a wise solution to the current crisis. He says the army has put forward a roadmap based on the constitution, and President Bouteflika has agreed to step down, sparing the country a political void. He says there will be a three-month period under an interim head of state, coinciding with national dialogue, followed by new elections under an independent electoral commission. Meanwhile, Islamist leaders, whose followers appear to be participating heavily in the ongoing demonstrations, are expressing disapproval of the army's interim plan. Abdullah Jabullah, head of the Islamist Justice and Development Party, was reported by Arab media as calling Monday's announcement null and void. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The World Health Organization says that insecurity and community mistrust in the Democratic Republic of the Congo's North Kivu province are major impediments to international health efforts to bring the deadly Ebola outbreak under control. Latest official figures put the number of Ebola cases in the eastern DRC at 1,089. That includes 679 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports an increase in the number of Ebola cases. Last week, it says, there were 72 recorded cases compared to 56 cases of the deadly disease the week before. WHO Assistant Director General for Emergencies Response, Ibrahima Sosfal, attributes the rise to insecurity and violence in the North Kivu hotspots of Butembo and Katwa. He says that has caused major disruptions in the ability of health workers to respond to the disease. As a consequence, he says people in contact with infected individuals are unprotected. He says contacts cannot get vaccinated or be followed for signs of illness. He says burials are not conducted safely, resulting in some mourners becoming infected. Speaking on a phone line from Butembo, Fall says the difficulty of getting people to understand that Ebola is a problem further complicates the situation.
We have so many other problems like insecurity, being killed for many years, access to water, education, and so on. So it takes time to convince them that Ebola is a real problem for them. And that's why we have started this community dialogue, to listen to them, to understand the problem, and working with development partners like World Bank and UNICEF to address the other problems they have been having for many, many years.
As part of this outreach program, Fall says 40 young people from the local communities have been trained and are now part of the burial and disinfection team. He says the response to this and other measures requested by the community are beginning to have a positive impact. The WHO estimates it will take at least 6 months before it gains control of the Ebola outbreak. It says it expects cases will continue to increase until full response measures can be put in place in all vulnerable areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
East African civil society groups are pledging to support the Kenyan government in the fight against corruption. The groups agree that corruption has a negative impact on development in the region. For more on this story, Maureen Ojambo has our report from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
The East African Civil Society Forum Kenya chapter chairperson Morris Odhiambo on Tuesday said that there is need of increased engagement with government to create policies key to the war on graft. Odhiambo says The initiative will also see non-governmental organizations, community groups, and faith-based organizations join the war on graft.
We want to take part in the fight against corruption because this is one of the agendas we have pursued consistently. And for us to be able to do that, we must then have the requisite space that is needed for us to be able to organize, for us to be able to implement our activities. And so our key message is that we must then relate the fight against corruption to citizen participation through the civil society.
Corruption in Kenya has been termed as a hindrance to the country's development. However, the convener of the civil society reference group, Suba Churchill, said that there is need for everyone to be involved in rooting out corruption.
We made commitments to first rid our own sector of corruption, which we are already doing, but also lend our support to other initiatives and processes that are aimed at fighting corruption. We are, for example, part and parcel of the Atmos Sector Initiative. But more importantly is that as a sector, we will be continuing to add our voice and amplify the voice of citizens in any fight against corruption.
A number of high-profile leaders, including governors, have been arrested due to graft and are facing various charges in court. Yesterday, Tuesday, Samburu Governor Moses Lenol Kulal was arrested over Kenya shillings 84.7 million fraud at the county. The Director of Public Prosecution, Rudin Haji, ordered his prosecution alongside 13 other officials in an ongoing probe into the graft claims. The Kenya High Court Chief Magistrate Douglas Ogoti barred Lenol Kulal from accessing the Samburu County government offices in Maralal pending the hearing and determination of an application to be filed by the Director of Public Prosecution.
Accused one shall be released on a bond of Kenya shillings 150 million with one surety of similar amount or a cash bail of Kenya shillings 100 million. The Director of IFMIS is directed not to allow the 13 accused persons, and to be specific, from accused one to accused 13 to access the government of Samburu accounts till the application to be filed is heard and determined. Accused two to accused 14 to present themselves for plea on 4th of April 2019 at 2 p.m.
Samburu County is among the most affected county with the drought situation that is being encountered in the country as its people perish, while the political leaders are accused of fund misappropriation from the county government. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, and for more stories and extended reports on what is happening around the continent, don't forget to check out our website at www.voanews.com. Senegalese civil society group Yenema, whose successful 2012 protests inspired similar movements all over the West and Central Africa, has changed leadership, a move they say will not only set an example for political leaders, but also help build institutional knowledge. Outgoing spokesperson Cyril Toure, who goes by his artistic name Thiet, spoke to reporter Ricky Shryok about the group's evolving goals and why it is important for him to step down after two terms.
I can say that, the NTS program and the NTS branch is the most sustainable social change that a society could have. Because for us, it's about leadership, it's about entrepreneurism, it's about environment, it's about health, and it's about like how to move forward our country with changing our behavior. Because for us, how we can cut the link in between the population with the politician, like in terms of dependence. They depend and rely only on the government and waiting for it. We change that way of thinking and then explain them that, no, this is about leadership. You have to take your hands and you have to take your own future by your own and make it happen.
The government actually, in reality, relies on the people.
Exactly. It has to be on the other side, like from the bottom to the top, not from the top to the bottom.
How important then is it to build institutional knowledge? Do you think by changing leadership after your two terms, you're able to make sure that the knowledge is spread not just within the leadership, but within the entire group?
First, when you have a movement like Yenema, you created it. And then the world is copying the model. Everybody is talking about the model. Nobody is talking about church. They're not talking about Fidel Barro. They're talking about Yanamar, the spirit, the institution, the concept, what you claim, not you. It's not about yourself. It's not about ego trip. It's about what you created. And then if you don't want the thing that you created to die, you have to quit and let some other people handle it. Then they will still talk about Yanamar, but not chat, but not Fidel Barro. This is how it should be.
And you say that it's been the Yanamar model has inspired models in DRC, in Burkina, has it inspired models in any other places?
Yes, a lot of places. I mean, even Gilets Jaunes are talking about Yanamar could be the model that what we are doing. So we had Sassou Nguesso, we had Nuit Debout, yes, we had as well Touspa Ama Constitution in Mauritania, we had Gambia Has Decide, Team Gumsabop Gambia, we had Les Sofas du Mali, we had a bunch of movement like Yanamar, inspired by Yanamar. And then ourselves, we establish and credit with our brothers in Burkina Faso, Ballet Citoyen. We were there protesting with them in the street and all of that. So it's been like something not belonging to us anymore. It's like it's the expression of the youth of the different countries, depending on their topics, on their realities, or on their context.
That was Sero Toure, former spokesperson for Yanamar. He was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Dakar. And we stay in West Africa, in Nigeria's busy commercial capital of Lagos, where reporter Samuel Okocha brings us this story of conservation and its intersection with the country's growing art market through the eyes of Gerard Chukwuma, an artist in Lagos. Chukwuma is using recycled drink cans and discarded phone recharge cards to create beautiful art pieces, and in the process, a chain of economic opportunities for people in his city.
A deep and closer look at some finished works is all you need to confirm Gerald Chukwuma's use of metals from old drink cans and worthless phone recharge cards that hitherto littered the streets of Lagos. But how does the process of using these recycled materials work into the creation of works of art?
If I pick up a can, for instance, the first thing I do is to remove it from the state it had been, which is the round cylindrical shape. So I cut it off, make it flat, flatten it out, hammer it down to flatten out, and then I cut with scissors, and then I nail onto the work. And then for the recharge card, sometimes I apply acrylics on them. I also cut it. I use punal glue to play around it to give me some kind of texture also.
Gerald is one of many artists deploying innovative practices in Nigeria's growing art scene, which has been attracting international attention in recent times. Last year, a 1974 painting of an Ife princess by late Nigerian artist Ben Onwuo was sold for more than £1 million at a London auction, a record for a modern Nigerian artist. Matthew Dominic works as a sales manager at a Lagos-based arts gallery. He says, along with the global recognition for Nigerian arts, the interest in Nigerian artworks has grown in recent years among locals. Samuel Okocha, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
And that's it for this Wednesday, April the 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. And we thank you for spending this morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On April 7th, the United Nations marks the 25th anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda. More than 800,000 people, mostly Tutsi, were killed. An in-depth discussion of what Rwanda and the world has learned from this tragedy on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA welcomes Sun FM in Zambia as its newest partner. VOA's popular programs, including Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, the 5-minute newscast on the top of the hour, and of course, VOA Music Mix, can all be heard now on Sun FM, 88.5 on the Copper Belt, 95.1 and 95.5 FM in Central Province, 95.3 in Lusaka Province, and 91.7 FM in Livingston. Welcome to the VOA Radio Affiliate family.